tree fell on the power line that goes directly to our house. So it's we're the only ones on the block without power.
Fairbanks residents make do in freezing temperatures without electricity. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, November 18th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, an Alaskan considers refusing a health insurance subsidy, even with skyrocketing premiums.
While it may be more affordable to me, it's not more affordable because someone is picking up the tab for me.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline is ready to help you succeed in your decision to quit tobacco. Take advantage of proven successful free resources. Trained quit coaches will provide support services to help you quit for good with confidential counseling. There's free nicotine replacement therapy and a tailored quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
The Department of Natural Resources has released a roadmap for getting a natural gas pipeline built, and it involves taking on a multi-billion dollar ownership stake in the project. The report suggests the state cover 20 to 30% of the project as an equity investment. Because the project is expected to cost more than $45 billion, that would mean spending at least $9 billion. Joe Balash is the state's Natural Resources Commissioner, and he's supportive of the idea.
Owner state gets thrown around a lot. This would be a real opportunity to demonstrate that concept in spades.
Balash says that taking on some of the risk would improve the likelihood of the project, and it could make it easier to work alongside Exxon, BP, and ConocoPhillips. He adds it could prevent a lot of the disagreements the state had with those companies over oil production.
A lot of the heartburn, a lot of the fights between the state of Alaska and industry were a consequence of that misalignment. And it could have been fixed right up front, and it wasn't. I think there's a lesson to be learned there, and we're no longer resource-rich and cash-poor. We're resource-rich and, frankly, cash-heavy.
The report, which was produced by the consulting company Black & Veatch, also looked at how changes to the state's royalty and tax system could affect the viability of a gas line. The state's gas tax structure is expected to be a topic of concern during the coming legislative session. Governor Sean Parnell issued a disaster declaration for the Fairbanks area today following a winter storm last week that caused a widespread power outage. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the declaration will help residents and the local electric co-op recover damages.
Hundreds of Golden Valley Electric Association customers remained without power Monday, 5 days after a storm toppled trees that damaged lines, poles, and other equipment from Fairbanks to Nenana. Over 13,000 customers initially lost electricity, and most have been brought back online. But Golden Valley spokeswoman Cassandra Cerny says there's still work to do.
An estimated 800 GVEA members are still without power. Power's been restored to the larger outage areas, and crews are now working on the individual outages, which are scattered across GVEA's system.
Golden Valley has brought in additional line workers from Anchorage to supplement its own crews and local contractors. They're working nonstop, but Cerny says progress has slowed due to the type of damage done by large trees that fell on individual properties.
When they came down, they took out some of our equipment and caused some major damage. So right now our crews are out, they're replacing transformers, they're putting new poles in the ground.
Cerny says it could be days before everyone is back online. The outage has affected residents in survival mode. Jose Rodriguez and Ruth Harper of North Pole were at the store Saturday loading up on supplies.
13 gallons of water, a heater attachment to hook up to a propane tank.
Candles. And batteries.
Gonna look for a generator.
Rodriguez and Harper said they'd been able to keep their house from sinking below 50 degrees as of Saturday. Rodriguez said they hope to stick it out at home with their dogs, even though the electricity might be out for a while.
The tree fell on the power line that goes directly to our house, so we're the only ones on the block without power.
Overnight lows are forecast to plummet to between 30 and 40 below zero this week, prompting North Star Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins to issue a proclamation seeking state help. Hopkins says state funds could be very important if the outage results in frozen pipes and other home damage.
Are there property damage and losses that we should be hearing about? And that's what this proclamation sets in place.
State Deputy Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management Mike O'Hare says the North Star Borough and local cities have done well responding to the situation, and the state disaster declaration is more about cost recovery.
Let's assess what's broken, and let's see what kind of programs we can bring together to fix it. And that's exactly what the governor's declaration is.
O'Hare says both homeowners and Golden Valley Electric, as a nonprofit co-op, will be able to apply for state programs to help cover the cost of storm and outage-related damage. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Residents of Kotlik are using emergency water supplies as crews attempt to reconnect the city's water system before the storage tanks are completely empty. The big surge of water and ice ripped up water and sewer lines, including the community's water source. At last check, they were down to just a few days of water.
The water pump is not in the river yet. We have no way of pumping more water until that pump is fixed.
Lori Mike is the Kotlik city manager. She says workers from the Alaska Rural Utilities Cooperative and local operators are working as fast as they can to connect to the river. In the meantime, residents are using imported water. 35 pallets of water came in from donations with the Alaska Commercial Company. More water came from the Emonic Corporation, the Red Cross, and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. Mike says 14 homes were impacted with water and ice damage. Some people are now leaving the school, which served as an emergency shelter, or their relatives' homes, and returning to their damaged homes.
Some have moved back into their homes, trying to get them heated up. The problem we're having now with people returning to their homes is no heat. Their source of heat, the Toyo stove laser, damaged and cannot be turned on. So that's our main issue, is getting heat in their homes.
There are concerns about mold and serious damage to insulation in the floors. And there's also a broader public health risk. The water and ice surge ripped off the main sewage discharge line. Residents have been using honey buckets as backup while volunteers work to get the pipe connected back to the lagoon. Before the system could be shut off, it created a mess and a safety hazard.
So that's our concern right there. The raw sewage on the ground and there's water all over, and springtime comes, it's going to be unhealthy. But Kotlik is very marshy, and the water is going to be spreading all over.
Mike says Red Cross volunteers are in town and more should be on the way. She is working to set up a way to accept donations of warm winter clothes for the displaced families. A state court judge has ruled that Alaska's newly redrawn political boundaries meet constitutional standards. Superior Court Judge Michael McConaughey issued the ruling today, granting the Alaska Redistricting Board's requests for summary judgment. The Alaska Supreme Court had ordered the board to redraw the state's political boundaries after allowing an interim map to be used for last year's elections. Issues of compactness and socioeconomic integration were raised in challenges to the way in which several of the districts were drawn in the latest iteration of the map. But McConaughey found the challenged districts passed constitutional muster. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Bethel residents debate the best way to preserve king salmon.
If we don't stop it right now, there's going to be nothing left, and it might be too late already.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ERA. For more than 40 years, ERA Alaska's planes have carried the stories of Alaska. ERA Alaska, bringing Alaskans together. More at flyera.com. Many Alaska business owners are paying too much for energy. The Commercial Building Energy Audit Program identifies an average of 30% in energy savings. The application period runs November 1st through December 20th. To learn more, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
About 9,000 Alaskans are being forced out of their existing health insurance plans under the Affordable Care Act. Last week, President Obama announced new rules that may allow some residents to keep their plans for another year. But for Fairbanks knife maker Mark Knapp, that fix doesn't go far enough. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Mark Knapp recently got a patent for a knife he calls the 1911 Combat Survivor. It looks like a basic hunting knife, but a compartment in the handle holds fire starter, a bowstring, and a small Leatherman, among other things. Knapp is packing up a small skiff to head to a remote spot on Kodiak Island to field test it.
We're going to the woods to hunt and fish and just use this thing in a harsh coastal environment and saltwater spray and all that, and see how it performs. That's what we're going to do.
Knapp is a proud small business owner who doesn't like the idea of getting assistance from anyone. He and his wife pay for health insurance on the individual market. This year, their premium was about $750 a month. But in October, Knapp got a letter from Primera Alaska saying his plan was being discontinued because of the Affordable Care Act.
We were pretty disappointed.
Primera suggested Knapp and his wife buy a similar plan for 2014 with a higher deductible that would cost $1,200 a month, a 60% increase. Insurance premiums are increasing in Alaska because all plans have to include a set of essential benefits, and insurance companies can't exclude people with pre-existing conditions. Because of their income, Knapp and his wife qualify for a subsidy of nearly $700 a month to help pay for the new plan. But Knapp doesn't like the idea of a government subsidy. He says it sounds like welfare.
While it may be more affordable to me, it's not more affordable in the overall picture, because someone is picking up the tab for me.
Knapp hopes Obama's recent fix for people with canceled plans will allow him to keep the plan he's on for another year. The state insurance director and Primera Alaska are still figuring out if that's possible. But ultimately, Knapp isn't satisfied with a short-term solution from the president.
All it does is postpone the problem. If I understand he's saying, no way, no how, will it ever be extended beyond a year?
When his plan is discontinued, Knapp says he has three choices. He can pay the higher premium, which he says he can't afford, buy a similar plan with a significant subsidy, or go uninsured. He says he's leaning toward the last option.
So for the first time in our adult lives, we're probably not going to be insured. And if we get sick, we're going to cover it ourselves if we can. And if we can't, then it's going to have to be amortized over a bunch of other hard-working Americans.
But for now, Knapp is focused on his next 2 weeks in the wilderness. He's looking forward to hunting deer, digging clams, fishing, and living off the land as much as possible. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Bethel's native tribe, ONC, held a public hearing on Chinook fishing restrictions next summer. It's part of a call out to tribes along the river to help come up with management options after poor king salmon runs the past several years. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes reports.
The weather was blowing sleet the night of the meeting, but still the room managed to fill up. The issue of king salmon, even in the month of November, is on people's minds. It's a large part of the local diet.
Half of the total king salmon subsistence harvest for the entire state of Alaska comes from the Kuskokwim area. Half for the entire state. That's how important it is here.
Doug Molyneux has been a salmon researcher on the Kuskokwim for 23 years. He started the public hearing off by sharing data. He said the river's subsistence harvest equals about 80,000 kings a year. Two-thirds of it is taken in the first 70 miles of the river, one-third by Bethel and one-third by villages downriver. During poor runs, like the last few years, it doesn't leave a lot of fish for the next 600 miles upriver.
If your total run is really low and you're still taking a high harvest in the lower river, they're seeing just really low densities of fish, and it takes them a lot longer to try to get the fish they want for subsistence.
The state's best preseason model predicted a run much different than what actually took place. Molyneux says it did not work the last 2 years.
The forecast was for almost twice what actually came back to the Kuskokwim River.
Bev Hoffman of Bethel moderated the public hearing. She's the co-chair of the local advisory group, the Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group, which has asked the river's tribes to help find solutions.
How many people want to see it completely closed? Raise your hand. How many people would like a window of opportunity? Raise your hand.
The vote was close, but a few more wanted a chance to fish. Still, several people spoke out in support of conserving now for future generations. Henry Hunter Sr. is on the tribe's subsistence board. He says past bans on moose hunting worked well.
They bounced back because we had that moratorium. You see a lot of moose here. I'd like to see a moratorium closure on the kings, too.
His sentiments were echoed by several other tribal members, including Mike Shantz. He says he voluntarily has not targeted king salmon for 4 years.
If we don't stop it right now, there's going to be nothing left, and it might be too late already. You know, it might not ever come back.
The tribe subsistence board came up with possible options for restrictions, many of which were similar to what the local advisory group had compiled. They include fishing schedules, starting a permitting system for who can fish when, and gear restrictions. Mary Sattler is from Bethel.
I think 8-inch gear should be banned because that really is targeting the big kings.
Bill Kristovich with Bethel's tribe says the public hearing was a good discussion, but they won't come up with a consensus on restrictions until they hear from more members of the public. The working group plans to come up with restriction recommendations for state and federal managers by the first of the year. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning-Barnes.
Bethel's rural status is not immediately at risk, but once the population hits 7,000, it will be presumed to be non-rural unless it proves to have rural characteristics. The Federal Subsistence Board is in a multi-year process of reviewing how it decides which communities have the critical rural priority for accessing resources on federal lands, as described under the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA. KYUK's Ben Matheson has the story.
The process of rural determination was the subject of a meeting in Bethel Wednesday, but most people gave their thoughts on Bethel's status regardless. Alan Joseph said he thought the population thresholds are somewhat arbitrary.
The community became non-rural at 7,000. It'd be like telling Yupiks here in Bethel that at 12 o'clock tonight, they're going to stop being Yupiks. You have to look at the way the people live and decide to keep it that way.
There are communities above 7,000 people still considered rural, like Sitka and Kodiak. To remain rural, they have to show rural characteristics. Mary Gregory made the case that subsistence is at the core of many people's lives.
If you come to my house right now, you will find 10 pikes hanging in my kitchen trying to dry out, and a string of tomcods that are also hanging, and my house smells like fish because I'm a 99.9% subsistence food user. And that's a lot of people are like that, especially the elderly people who live here.
Ignatius Louis Andrew recognized that change has accelerated in recent years, but the basic native values are still strong.
We have gone through a tremendous changes, but as we continue to change, subsistence, traditional native practices, and values in these practices will provide a continuity to the past.
Bethel specifically sees a lot of turnover, according to Roberta Chavez.
People come and go to Bethel all the time. You see them moving here, leaving here, and the people that remain have been here since time immemorial, and they have the right to continue to live that way.
There are a total of 10 meetings happening all around the state. Comments will be analyzed and brought to the Federal Subsistence Board. Steve Kessler works as the Forest Service's subsistence program leader. He says the comments are important to the process.
Are these thresholds guidelines the correct ones to use, or should we be using something else? Should we be aggregating communities in some other way? What does the public think that the Federal Subsistence Board and the Secretaries of the Interior and Agriculture ought to be using to determine which communities are rural?
The board will meet in April and could propose changes to pass up to the Secretaries of the Interior and Agriculture, who ultimately make the call on the rural determination process. You can give comments by emailing subsistence@fws.gov. The deadline for comments is December 2nd. I'm Ben Matheson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alex Hotel and Suites, featuring amenities that include a 24-hour airport shuttle, hot continental breakfast, and a walk-in freezer. Information on Alaska resident rates at 1-800-221-7550. And by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Since 1978, the Older Persons Action Group has been the publisher of Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide newspaper for older Alaskans and their families. They now offer a digital version online at seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
A cell and repeater tower that was blown down by strong winds east of Willow late last month has brought the issue of tall tower regulations to the forefront in the Mat-Su Valley. The borough currently has an advisory committee looking into what requirements companies should follow. KTNA's Philip Manning has this report.
Alex Strawn with the planning division of the borough says that the tower fell at a very interesting time, since the next meeting of the Tall Tower Advisory Committee will be focused solely on whether to require a setback radius around new towers. Rick Brendan is part of the committee and says that the past failure of ordinances in the borough assembly led to a situation where there were virtually no restrictions.
So they went about 8-10 months without anything, and the tower cell company in particular were not regulated, so towers just sprung up like weeds all over the place, which kind of awakened people to that issue, and they got on the borough assembly and they started making some rules, but setbacks were omitted deliberately and have been kept omitted, and that's starting to anger people.
Rick Brendan says that sort of unregulated construction can pose a safety risk. He's found over 300 photos of towers that have fallen long and flat, despite the argument that towers rarely fail and tend to collapse around their own base when they do. He says this incident lends further weight to his push for having regulations requiring new towers to be built so that they cannot fall on adjacent structures or property. Jim Sykes, newly seated borough assembly member for District 1, agrees that this incident illustrates what can potentially happen with a tall tower.
There has been lots of talk about these things almost never fail, they almost never fall, and if they do fall, they collapse on themselves, and they're very rarely a problem outside of the, you know, just a few feet of where the tower stands. And, you know, this shows that not only did the tower fall as a single piece and did not collapse on itself, but it used up the full radius of the height of the tower.
Jim Sykes has been involved with radio towers for many years, including the extension of the tower that broadcasts KTNA's signal. He says that he is not a proponent of excessive regulation, but that he is a, quote, safety guy.
When we have man-made structures of this sort, which sometimes do fail, they don't do it that often, but when we have the capability to keep an eye on safety and take a look at the height of the tower and where it could potentially fall, if it ever fell, and hopefully it never does. But if it did, we have control over where to put it.
Jim Sykes says that it's often possible for cell phone carriers and communities to work together in order to find a location for new towers that's acceptable to everyone. As an example, he cites the Lazy Mountain area where he lives, where the community and builder came to an agreement that was almost universally amenable. Ken Slauson, who chairs the advisory committee, says that the safety record for tall towers in the borough is actually fairly good. He says the Willow Tower is the first one to fall the way it did in 30 years. Slauson says that some of the debate is being fueled by not-in-my-backyard syndrome. He says his goal is for the committee to find the minimum necessary regulation to present to the assembly for a vote. In Talkeetna, I'm Philip Manning.
Dillingham Elementary School's Denise Lisak has been named Alaska's Teacher of the Year for 2014. Lisak has been an educator for 33 years, 30 of them in Dillingham, teaching kindergarten and first grade. And now as school-wide reading specialist, one of her former first graders is now a student reporter at KDLG. Connor Ito has this story.
So does anyone know what a roundup would be like?
Oh,
Morgan, what's a roundup?
It's where, like, the cowboys get the cows.
Reading teacher Denise Lisak has four Dillingham Elementary fourth graders enthralled in the history of dude ranching.
In the oceans and stuff.
What do they do to them? They
gather them up together.
They round them up, they gather them up.
Lisak was recently named Alaska's Teacher of the Year for 2014.
It's kind of unbelievable. It's really neat. It's a great honor for the community of Dillingham, and I've, I'm real proud to represent our school and our state, and good things happen here in Dillingham.
Her colleagues say she is among the best of the best, but in her more than three decades of quiet, committed service as an educator, Lisek says worrying about recognition has never been part of the job.
I teach because I really enjoy it, and I like coming to school every day and being with the kids, and I never really wanted this award, and it just happened, you know, and it just started snowballing, and I wish this award could go to more people. And it's hard to say, oh, they can only pick one, and I should be the one, because there's just a lot of really good teachers. But it feels good.
State Teacher of the Year nominees have the often difficult task of selling their attributes to the state's Committee of Educators. Lisek told them she has a simple philosophy that works. A strong sense of community is necessary for children's success in the classroom.
And I always started out my classroom with that in mind, that the students, we work cooperatively together, and so that they're very familiar with one another, and then they work better together.
As a reading teacher, Lisek has what she calls the rare privilege of taking her personality classroom to classroom, sharing a love of reading with students, like those fourth graders. We're trying to figure out what those dude ranchers are going to do with all those cattle.
What do you think they're
going to
do with them, Angelina, once they round them up?
Round them up? They could either ride them, milk them,
or
cook them.
Cook them? Ride them,
milk them,
or cook them. Well, maybe they'll do that.
Okay. As Teacher of the Year, Lisek gets to offer a scholarship to one student, will speak at conferences and workshops as Alaska's top educator, and will travel to Washington, D.C., meet the president, and could be named the nation's Teacher of the Year.
This is pretty amazing. I can't imagine that.
For Lisek, the award is certainly an honor. But she says, like most teachers, the real reward is watching his students grow up and progress.
For me, it is so wonderful to watch my students from first grade and watch them graduate. And you're still in high school, right? Mm-hmm. And do such wonderful things. And it makes me proud that you're interviewing me for KDLG. I think, wow, yeah, because you're one of my past students.
In Dillingham, I'm Connor Ito.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ben Matheson and Angela Denning-Barnes in Bethel, Philip Manning in Talkeetna, and Connor Ito in Dillingham. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Premier Dental Group, providing full-service dental care for the entire family with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Service information at smilealaska.com.
And by
ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnickarm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Matsu Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnickarm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Many Alaska business owners are paying too much for energy. The Commercial Building Energy Audit Program identifies an average of 30% in energy savings. The application period runs November 1st through December 20th. To learn more, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.